All right, so today we're going to be doing a deep dive into a Supreme Court case from 1976.
Craig v. Boren?
Craig v. Boren. And at first glance, this one might seem like just a weird little story about beer.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we dig in, we're going to find that it's a lot more consequential than that.
Oh, absolutely. And we're dealing with an Oklahoma law that said women could buy 3.2% beer at age 18.
Okay.
But men had to wait until 21.
So right off the bat, like, what is going on here?
Right.
Why is there this like weird gender-based distinction?
Yeah. What was the thinking there? And how did the Supreme Court end up having to weigh in on this?
Yeah. Well, the challengers of this law said it was discriminatory, pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And when the case made its way up to the Supreme Court, Justice Brennan, the author of the majority opinion, he agreed, and he was very clear in his opinion.
Yeah.
Oklahoma law, unconstitutional.
Wow.
Yeah.
So no messing around there.
Nope.
And there's a little bit of a twist in this case, right?
Because one of the guys who brought the case originally, a guy named Craig, he actually turned 21 while all of this was going on.
He did.
So he kind of aged out of the whole argument.
Yeah, he almost made the whole thing moot.
Right.
You know, when a case is moot, it means it's essentially pointless because the issue has resolved itself.
Right, right.
But that's where the other person involved in the case comes in, a beer vendor named Whitener.
Okay, so even though this guy Craig was kind of like out of the picture by this point,
right,
the court still said, okay, we're going to hear this case because of this beer vendor, Whitener.
Yeah.
So what was it about her situation that made them say, all right, this is still worth looking at?
So the court decided that Whitener had what we call standing to bring the case.
Okay.
Standing basically means you have the right to sue.
Okay.
Because you're the one who's been harmed.
Gotcha.
And in this case, they said she had a dog in the fight because the law was directly impacting her business.
Of course. Yeah.
If young men couldn't buy beer from her, she was losing out on a whole bunch of potential customers.
Yeah. It wasn't just some, you know, abstract legal question. It was actually affecting her bottom line.
Exactly.
Interesting. And I think you mentioned that this actually kind of mirrored a case from before this one.
Yes. So this reminds me of an earlier case, Eisenstadt v. Baird.
Okay.
And in this case, a man who had been convicted of giving out contraceptives, he was allowed to argue for the privacy rights of other people.
Interesting.
Because his own interests were so tied up with theirs. So sometimes the court will allow someone to stand up for the rights of others if their own well-being is on the line.
Interesting precedent there.
Yeah.
So getting back to Craig v. Boren, now we've established that the court's going to hear it,
but
there's a reason for them to hear it.
Right.
But Oklahoma was trying to defend this law, saying, you know, it's all about traffic safety.
Yeah, that was their argument.
Right.
But Justice Brennan, he really picks that argument apart. He goes point by point. And he even uses the state's own statistics to show that the difference in DUI arrests between young men and women in that age group was minuscule.
How small are we talking here?
We're talking like 2%.
2%.
2%.
Yeah.
So the court basically said you can't restrict the rights of 98% of young men.
Right.
Just because of what a tiny fraction of them are doing.
Yeah. They're basically saying you can't paint with too broad a brush.
Exactly.
And the law itself was just kind of strange.
It was.
Like, I was reading that it only banned the sale of beer to young men.
Right.
It didn't actually ban them from drinking it.
Yeah. You could have a young woman buy the beer legally.
Oh, wow.
And then hand it to her under 21 boyfriend.
So there were already loopholes built in.
Big loopholes.
So it seems like Oklahoma was really kind of grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
Because they even tried to use the 21st Amendment.
Right. The one that repealed prohibition.
Yeah. To try to defend this law.
Like, we have the power to regulate alcohol however we want. But the court was not having it. They basically said, look, the 21st Amendment doesn't give states a blank check to discriminate.
Mm.
And they even pointed out that other courts had already struck down similar gender-based rules in places like bars and liquor stores.
So the writing was already on the wall.
It seems that way.
But of course, you know, it's the Supreme Court, so you're going to have different opinions.
Well, of course.
So who were some of the justices that disagreed with this majority opinion?
So you had Chief Justice Burger, who wasn't convinced that Whitener even had the right to bring the case in the first place.
Okay.
And then you had Justice Rehnquist, who felt that the court was applying too strict of a standard when they reviewed this law.
So he's saying, you know, maybe take it easy a little bit.
Yeah. He favored what we call the rational basis test.
And remind me what that is again.
So the rational basis test basically means that the law just needs to be reasonably related to a legitimate goal.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to kind of make sense.
Right.
But he didn't like how the court was using statistics.
No, he thought they were nitpicking.
Okay.
And that they should have deferred to the judgment of the legislature a little bit more.
Interesting. So he's saying, you know, they came up with this law for a reason.
Right.
Let's assume they had good intentions.
Yeah, give them the benefit of the doubt.
Okay.
And he even went so far as to say that if the state could theoretically ban everyone under 21 from buying beer, then banning only men shouldn't be a problem.
Huh, that's interesting.
It is. It's a thought-provoking argument.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show how, even in a case like this, that seems pretty straightforward.
About age and drinking.
Right. There can be some really different ways of looking at the law.
Yeah, and how it should be applied.
Exactly. And for the record, there were also some concurring opinions.
Right. So justices who agreed with the outcome.
Right.
But maybe not necessarily for all the same reasons.
Yeah. So, for example, Justice Powell, he actually felt that the statistics did show that young men drove and drank more.
Right.
But he still thought the law was too weak and had too many loopholes to be justifiable.
Okay.
So, you know, just goes to show.
Yeah.
You can have a law that seems like common sense on its face.
Uh-huh.
But when you dig into it, you find all these different opinions and this debate about fundamental rights.
And all this stemming from who can buy 3.2% beer.
It's pretty amazing.
It really is.
It's a great example of how something that seems really simple can actually be very nuanced.
Absolutely.
And how these small legal battles can have really big implications for how we understand and apply the Constitution.
It's kind of blowing my mind right now.
It's fascinating stuff.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay, so we've covered the majority opinion, the dissent. We've kind of set the stage here.
We have.
But I'm really interested to hear more about, you know, the lasting impact of this case.
Okay.
Did Craig v. Boren just kind of fade into obscurity?
Not at all.
Or did it actually set some important precedents?
It definitely left its mark.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So what kind of lasting impact are we talking about here?
Well, one of the big things that Craig v. Boren is known for is that it's kind of considered by some legal scholars to be the birthplace of something called intermediate scrutiny.
Intermediate scrutiny?
Yes, when it comes to cases dealing with gender discrimination.
Okay, so I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
Sure.
That sounds very much like legalese.
Of course.
Okay.
So basically, when the court is deciding whether a law violates the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment, they use different levels of what we call scrutiny.
Okay.
And the highest level is strict scrutiny.
Okay.
And that's usually reserved for laws that discriminate based on things like race or national origin.
Okay.
For a law to pass strict scrutiny, it has to be very narrowly tailored to achieve a super important or what they call compelling government interest.
So that's like the ultimate test.
It is.
Okay.
But then you have intermediate scrutiny,
okay,
which is kind of in between. So laws that are facing this level of scrutiny, they have to serve an important government objective and be substantially related to achieving that objective.
So it's a little bit less demanding than strict scrutiny.
A bit less demanding.
But are we saying then that the court with Craig v. Boren kind of created this whole new level of scrutiny?
That's the debate.
Okay.
Some legal scholars say that the language that was used in Craig v. Boren, specifically that requirement of an important objective and a substantial relationship, that it really laid the foundation for how we understand intermediate scrutiny today.
So this case wasn't just about beer. It was about setting a precedent.
Exactly.
For how courts are going to look at all kinds of gender discrimination cases going forward.
Exactly. And this has had a really big impact.
Okay.
Think about all the different areas where we still have gender-based laws.
You're like, what are we talking?
Well, things like military service.
Okay.
Parental leave policies, even dress codes. Craig v. Boren helped to shape the legal framework for how we challenge those laws and push for greater equality.
So it's crazy to think that this case about beer had this ripple effect.
It is pretty remarkable.
In all these different areas.
It is.
Yeah.
And it really speaks to how interconnected law and society really are.
Absolutely.
What might seem like a very narrow ruling can end up having much broader consequences.
Okay, so we talked about intermediate scrutiny. That's one of the lasting effects.
Yes.
What are some other kind of specific things that Craig v. Boren did?
Well, another really important thing it did was shift the burden of proof in gender discrimination cases.
Interesting. Okay, so what do you mean by that?
So before Craig v. Bourne, there was this assumption
Okay.
that laws, even ones that discriminated based on sex, were constitutional unless
Oscar.
proven otherwise.
So it was up to the people who were being discriminated against
Right.
to prove that the law was unfair.
Exactly.
Right?
But Craig v. Bourne kind of flipped the script.
Okay.
Now, when the government makes a law that treats men and women differently,
Yeah.
they are the ones who have to justify it.
Lawyer.
They have to show that the law serves an important objective
Okay.
and that the discrimination is actually necessary to meet that objective.
So it's not just innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
It's more like you better have a really good reason
You got it.
for treating people differently based on their sex.
Precisely. And this was huge
Okay.
because it gave people a much stronger legal basis
Yeah.
to argue that laws that treated them differently because of their sex were wrong.
So by raising the bar for the government, it kind of empowered individuals to fight for their rights
Exactly.
in a more effective way.
And this empowerment wasn't just confined to courtrooms.
Okay.
This case sparked much broader conversations in society about things like gender roles,
Okay.
stereotypes, the whole idea of equality.
So it was a legal victory,
It was.
but it also led to cultural shifts
Absolutely. It
for
put
proven
these
law.
issues front and center
Yeah.
and forced people to really think about their assumptions.
About gender and the law.
Yeah.
Wow. So the more we unpack this case, the more fascinating it gets.
It really is a fascinating case.
It started as this kind of simple dispute over beer,
Right.
but it ended up really paving the way for progress
It did.
in the fight for gender equality.
It's a classic example of
Yeah.
how a case that might seem minor on the surface
Right.
can have these massive, far-reaching consequences.
Absolutely.
And it reminds us that legal battles aren't just about these abstract principles, they're about real people's lives
Yeah.
and how those lives are shaped by the laws we live under.
It's about fairness.
Yes.
It's about opportunity
Absolutely.
and about ensuring that everyone has an equal shot, regardless of their gender.
You said it perfectly.
It's amazing to me, like, as we've been going through this case,
Huh?
how much weight the court put on those DUI statistics.
Yeah.
And it really makes me think about how much data plays a role in all of our lives today.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like we're constantly surrounded by data,
Right.
algorithms, targeted advertising, all of it.
We live in a world where data is just constantly being collected and analyzed. And as we saw with Craig v. Bourne, the way we use that data can have really significant implications, especially when we're talking about issues like equality.
Exactly. And it makes me wonder,
Yeah.
how do we make sure we're using data responsibly?
That's the million-dollar question. How
Right.
do we avoid accidentally, reinforcing harmful stereotypes?
Yeah, even when we don't mean to.
Exactly.
It's a tough question, but it's an important one.
It's crucial whether you're a lawmaker or a researcher or just someone scrolling through their social media feed. We all need to be critical of the data that we're seeing.
Okay, so what are some like practical tips?
Okay, so first of all,
Yeah.
always think about the source.
Okay.
Where did this data come from?
Yeah.
What were their methods? Could there be any bias in how the data was collected or presented?
So don't just take the data at face value.
Right. Do your homework.
Okay, good advice.
The second thing is be wary of generalizations.
Okay.
Even if you see a really clear trend in the data,
Right.
remember, data can't tell the whole story.
Yeah.
There are always exceptions.
Like in Craig v. Bourne, just because some young men drink and drive
Exactly.
doesn't mean all of them do.
Right.
And I guess the last thing would be to really think about the potential consequences of how this data is being used.
Absolutely. Could it lead to unfair outcomes? Could it reinforce stereotypes even if unintentionally?
So it's really about being thoughtful,
Yes.
about being responsible.
Being a conscious consumer of data.
Yeah, not just blindly accepting whatever we see.
Exactly. And we also need to hold others accountable.
Oh, yeah.
Demand transparency. Yeah.
Challenge conclusions that don't seem right and advocate for policies that are fair and equitable.
So data isn't just some neutral thing.
Right.
It can be used for good or bad.
Absolutely.
And it's really on us to be aware of
To
that.
be vigilant.
Well, this has been a really eye-opening deep dive into Craig v. Bourne.
It has.
We started talking about beer, but
Right.
it became so much more than that.
I did.
It's a story about fighting for what's right, challenging assumptions.
Switching the status quo.
And recognizing just how powerful data can be.
And how much responsibility comes with that power.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Like you enjoyed it.
So thanks for joining us on this journey through the legal landscape.
My pleasure.
And to our listeners, we hope this has inspired you to keep exploring the world of law and data and the pursuit of a more just society.
That's what it's all about.
That's it for this deep dive. See you next time.